Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur, and I am your host, Johnny Naster. Welcome to the show. If this is your first time here, I want you to know we're not here to talk about flashy marketing tactics or to talk about the endless hustle of business. Instead, we're here to show you some insights, some glimmers of what it takes to be an entrepreneur in 2019. If you have been here before, welcome back. You know how much I appreciate you being here, and I think you're going to really, really dig today's show. So let's get into it. My guest today is a veteran of the online tech world, and over the years, he's had such corporate clients as Microsoft, Yahoo, Mercedes-Benz, Warner Brothers, and even Shaquille O'Neal. Today, though, he teaches online courses. He writes, and he runs several software businesses, his latest being a simple privacy-based website analytics platform called Fathom. Plus, he does all this from his home on an island on the west coast of Canada. That bio makes him sound like somebody who probably has a massive team of people working with him and for him, and that he is constantly, constantly hustling. But his latest project, a book called Company of One, is written to dispel that myth. It's your official guide to building around the idea that staying small and avoiding growth can be more durable and even more enjoyable. Now, let's hack author, entrepreneur, and Canadian, Paul Jarvis.
When it comes to marketing your business, it's all about reaching the right audience at the right time. And it's about connecting with them when your message will resonate the most. So if you want to target your customers where they are every day and when they are ready to make a decision, LinkedIn can help you. When you advertise on LinkedIn, it's the world's largest professional network, in case you didn't know, you have the opportunity to build long-term relationships with your customers. Relationships that often translate into high-quality leads, website traffic, and higher brand awareness. So what's the first step? It's talking to the right audience. Well, every day over 500 million professionals engage with content on LinkedIn, and chances are your future customers are among them. And the best part is you can start for free today. To redeem a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit, go to linkedin.com/hack. That's linkedin.com/hack for your free $100 ad credit. Yes, some terms and conditions apply, but there's $100 in advertising money waiting for you at linkedin.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
Absolutely, absolutely my pleasure. I've been looking forward to this for, I'm going to say many years even, but we're finally getting to sit down and I think it's going to be fun. So let's jump into it, shall we?
Absolutely. I hope I'm not that elusive that it took a couple of years.
Well, you know, sometimes it is. We have gatekeepers.
Yeah.
So let's start here, Tom. As an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
One thing. It's so hard to narrow things down to one like that. I would say never accepting what is presented to me as the final product, You know what I mean? Like always pushing for better than whatever it happens to be. And I think it's funny because I think our team here would probably point that out as a fault against me. I think they don't like to be on the receiving end of that. Like 90% can be awesome or 95% can be awesome. And I spend about like 40 seconds on the 95% that are awesome. And then I spend the next 59 minutes on the 5% that I think can be better. So I think that's the kind of the everlasting pursuit of better than what we had. I won't say perfection because you never will achieve it. You will always find fault in whatever it is that you're doing. but just constantly strive for better.
So, yeah. So I love sort of the way you clarified that it wasn't perfection you're after, because that's obviously, you would still be waiting to launch AWeber if that was the case.
Yeah.
But this idea of sort of striving to be better, I'm wondering, like, just how this sort of works out. Like, the one connection I'm making in my head is, like, Toyota's, like, five whys from, like, the 80s. When it was just, like, they were constantly trying to get further into the problem, almost, to solve it in a better way. Is it, like, some sort of process like this that you follow? Or is it literally just, here it's presented, and then how can we make it better?
Yeah, it's things that I've seen over the years where oftentimes the problems that you're solving today are still similar to problems that you've solved in the past. You're just solving them with different people, either for different customers or different team members iterating on them. So you can take lessons from the past that might be like tangentially related to what it is that you're working on now and apply them to things that you're doing now. I would love to say that I have a defined system for doing it. It's kind of that gut instinct and past experience and talking with lots of customers, talking with lots of team members, and just constant learning and going, hey, like, have you thought about X, Y, or Z when you craft a user interface like that? And very often it's like, yeah, we thought about that. Oh no, we didn't think about that part. Okay, well, in what way should we be worried about that? And I'll list off a half a dozen or something like that. And they'll go back to the kind of the drawing board and see if what they came up with fits or how they can iterate on it to make it better. Because after 20 years of doing this, I've seen just about every possible question that you can get from somebody and every which way that someone could get hung up on it. And I've worked with a lot of really talented folks that have taught me a whole lot. So anytime I get to look at something, it's an opportunity to kind of poke holes in it. And even if the poking holes is not necessarily making the interface better or whatever the thing is better, but the poking holes for me is often my own education of like, okay, so why'd you decide to do it that way? Oh, okay, that makes sense. I never thought about it like that. And you're then able to take that to something else that you interact with on a daily basis. So it's just kind of that like constant learning process and kind of constant iteration. So I unfortunately haven't boiled it down to five summary lines.
Right. No, but I mean, at the end, you said it's like understanding why you do that. And that's I mean, is the Toyota sort of thing, is trying to understand the underlying reason for what it is you're doing.
Sure.
Which is cool, because then it gives you this sort of higher level view of the decision.
Mm-hmm.
But talking about how you've done this, and you've done this for 20 years, myself and probably lots of people listening weren't in email marketing 20 years ago. Can you take us back 20 years this year to 1998 and just sort of briefly walk us through the inception of AWeber?
Sure. So to mildly predate the 1998, I was in college at the time. I was studying mechanical engineering at Penn State, decided I didn't want to do that, switched to finance, switched schools with the intentions of finishing out my degree at University of Maryland. And one thing led to another, and I was always interested in computers, and I was selling these wireless modems on the side. And this was back before you had iPhones and Androids in your pocket that you could connect to the internet with seamlessly. So it was this device that you'd mount on the back of your laptop and connect to the internet. Very, very slow. You know, remember 97, 98 was still territory of dial-up modems, as painful as that is to think about. And I had developed basically a series of email messages that when somebody inquired on my website that I'd set up to sell these, or when I went to computer shows and had a booth and was selling these there, people would inquire. I basically automated an email series to follow up with them that answered common questions, asked them more information about how they perceived use cases. And I basically kind of built up a rapport with the people that had inquired and kind of went from there. One thing led to another. I ended up leaving that company it was something I was doing on the side and to focus on school. And other salespeople for the same product, I had shared this email series that I was using with them, because it's funny, it ties into the asking for feedback. I shared it with other people because I wanted to know what worked for them. And if they came up with an email that worked a little bit better than the one that I had, like, I wanted to hear about it. So I shared it with a bunch of other folks that were doing it. And when I left, I stopped running the email system that I had set up. And they started coming to me and saying, hey, like, I'll pay you for that follow-up email thing that you made. I was like, well, it doesn't really exist. I just did it for this one company, and I'm not running that anymore, and yada, yada. I was bussing tables at an Olive Garden at the time. And when I got to think, I was like, maybe I should figure out how to make this software work and I can charge some money for it. And then I won't have to bus tables and have spaghetti sauce up to my arms every night. So over the course of 6-12 months or so, I figured out how to do that. I figured out how to write code enough to be able to launch the initial version of AWeber. And it was originally Automated Web Assistant. And I was a little too long to name your company. So it kind of got shortened. And the natural shortening of that is like AWeber. No, that's the wrong kind of company. So it got tweaked a little to AWeber. And that's kind of the origin of the name. And it's been, it doesn't have meaning more than the Automated Web Assistant originally. And just getting shortened into something that was catchy, the domain name was available, and it's unique to us. When people talk about AWeber, you're talking about us. You're not talking about anything else in the world. So unless you're talking about a space Weber grill or something like that.
A Weber grill. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Automated Web Assistant. Wow. I didn't even think to ask where the name came from.
Yeah.
But wow.
So it was originally just a follow-up thing. It wasn't even a newsletter tour. It was a sequence of 7 messages that you could send out over a period of time. So whether it was 1-day intervals or 5-day intervals, et cetera. But it was literally 7 emails. They were all plain text. You get to decide what they were going to say and how frequently they were going to send. And that's what would happen. And the tool has evolved massively since then into the marketing automation tool that it's become today.
Wow. So can you refresh my memory? 1998, how far off of that is like sort of Hotmail when like everybody all of a sudden had a Hotmail account?
Oh, gosh.
There was that time in there somewhere where nobody really had email. Then all of a sudden everybody had an email account.
Yeah, it was around that. I don't know what the exact timing of Hotmail was. Gmail came years later. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go back and look. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it was right around then. Like Amazon was a thing then, but yeah, it was like this ugly bookstore.
You know? It was.
All these things that are really huge now were around to some extent. Some were, some weren't. We predate Google, so which is both cool and interesting historically.
It is, yeah. I'm assuming you had no idea that 20 years later you'd be sitting here talking, well, obviously not talking to me, but that you had an idea, but that AWeber, this piece of a few emails sending out to people would become this company with, I think, over 100 employees at this point,
yep,
over 100,000 customers at this, yeah, point. That's staggering.
Yeah, no idea. And it kind of goes back to that like iterative kind of thing. It's like, okay, I hire your first person and then hire your second. And then you get your first customer and you get your 500th customer and you get your 1,000th. You know, it's like an iterative thing. And over time, it turns into something really awesome. But it starts out kind of like this little thing in a corner. And that's very much what it was. It was me in a corner of a bedroom. So.
And then seeing also, I guess, how does it affect you to see the, I guess, the growth of the internet or the email marketing service provider market, right? Because there was no MailChimp at the time. There was no, say, ActiveCampaign or Drip or these things.
Sure.
But also there was not nearly as many people needing email service providers.
Certainly.
So how do you, as like, you're the forefront of it, you are that thing. And so everybody kind of coming up is like new competition. Do you focus on it? Do you ignore it? What do you do?
I wouldn't say you focus on it. You pay attention. You certainly can't ignore it. Because at the end of the day, they're serving a particular market niche that you may not be serving or you may not be reaching through your marketing in some way. It's funny, like every now and then I'll go through like bookmarks. I used to keep this big folder that was like competitors, and there were hundreds of different email service providers that were out there. And every now and then I would just go through and like do one of those like open in new tabs kind of thing. And it's like more often than not, like 50% of the tabs just no longer load anything. So I've seen a lot of competitors come and go over the years. A lot of folks come and spend a whole bunch of money and then realize like, yeah, that's not how you get customers necessarily. And so it's lots have come and gone. I'm sure there will be folks that are here today that will not be here in the future. I like to think that we have the right model and we help our customers in the right way from a value standpoint that will continue to exist for many decades into the future. Email has certainly evolved dramatically from what it was 20 years ago, let alone 5 or 10 years ago, around all of the stuff that we're doing these days with marketing automation and tagging and different workflows and campaigns that people can set up. So it's very, very different than back in the early days. And we have a very large engineering team that's constantly iterating on our product. We every day kind of speaking to the iterative process that we started this conversation out as, is every day our engineering team is pushing dozens of little, sometimes big changes to our site that our customers are able to utilize immediately. So it's kind of a constant evolution.
Who stays sort of at the focus? Is it just, I guess there's probably a product team, but of deciding what you should be implementing and what you shouldn't? Because I mean, as you said, competition comes up and they might be serving new markets, but they have different, like the market's changing and the way email sure. works. But I'm sure you yeah. don't want to be like, we're going to do what all of these do in one big thing, because that would just be a cluster cuss, as they say.
Yes. Yeah, we have a really talented product team here of about a half a dozen folks, headed by our director of product. At the end of the day, I'm still very involved in the product personally. Like, I like to build stuff. It's just cool. It kind of goes back to my like mechanical engineering roots. It's like, I just like to build stuff. And I like to build stuff that people use and that they find value in. So it's understand the why as far as what a customer problem is, and think best based on our skill sets and how we've helped other customers solve those same problems or slight variations on those problems. And that's kind of what our product team really does, is they really have to ask why, because we get lots of customers or potential customers are like, well, you don't have this feature. Like, I need this feature. And it's like, okay, why do you need that feature? Oh, it's to solve this thing over here. Yeah, we don't solve it with that feature. Like these other guys, like, yeah, they have that feature, but like they're doing it wrong. We solve it with this thing over here that actually does it better. And here's why we think it's better. And like that conversation is really interesting at times with customers and with our own internal team, because it's a constant education process there. But that's at the end of the day, it's you got to know what the problem is that you're solving so that you can then go and figure out the best way to solve it. And if you just play the like check the feature box kind of thing, you eventually have this Frankenstein of a product that doesn't solve anyone's needs. So it's a balance. So no two services are ever going to have the same features. It's just never going to happen.
Right. I just see you as in a unique spot because you're like the Photoshop. Like you were the original there, the best. And then all these other people come around and sometimes, like Photoshop, you could say, they just keep adding everything. And then all of a sudden it's just like, okay, this is no good anymore.
Yeah.
But it seems like you guys don't do that. And that's why like it's got to be a lot of restraint to hold back from wanting to being like, this must be the next good thing. This must be it. And then all of a sudden, you're right, you have this Frankenstein product yeah. that doesn't make any sense.
We also have to be willing to kill things that you did in the past, too.
That's
you know
true.
What I mean? So like this has outlived its effective usefulness. It's time to set it aside. It's kind of like you look at your laptop that you're using now, and one, you probably are using a laptop, whereas back in the day, it was a desktop computer. And does it have a parallel port? No. Does it have a serial port? No. Does it have a modem port? No. You know, does it have more than like two ports, you know, so depending on what Apple device you use, it may only have one. So all of those things are gone and they served an effective usefulness at the time, but we've iterated beyond those. So same sort of things. And you'll have people that are upset when you take away the CD-ROM drive in your laptop. Like, how am I going to read the CD-ROMs anymore? Well, it's all online. I don't need to install software anymore from my computer directly. So
I remember that one. Wow. That was, yeah. We almost don't even call them laptops anymore. They're just computers now. This
right,
is just
exactly.
how they are.
Exactly. Like, do people actually own desktop computers? Like, I know people do, but like gamers, video editors, those sort of folks that require a lot of horsepower. But for
beyond
the most
that.
Part, like, I'm trying to think the number of desktop computers we have in our building now. One is the only one I can think of, and it's our video producer.
Yeah. Just like you said, they need that horsepower.
Yeah.
So with iteration and sort of evolution of markets, from the product side, I love your sort of take on it and the way you're executing on it. But what about from like a team side and like employees in the team? Because there's been another evolution that has changed, like in the tech space, which you are absolutely in, obviously, like remote working and people being fully distributed teams around the world. I don't think that existed back in 1998 or even 2008 for the most part. How do you sort of approach those things yet still trying to acquire and retain the talent that you need?
Yeah. So we're based out of Philadelphia here on the East Coast, and all of our team except one person is in the office regularly, like on a, you know, most days of the week, they're in the office. We do have flexibility and work from home and that sort of thing if you need to. But the way that we've decided to work together and the way that we've decided that we add the most value to each other's lives and our customers' lives is by being together. And I think that that is somewhat unique in many ways, especially in the software world. I mean, that so many places have gone to just remote workers and like you don't have the same level of connection with the folks that are remote. And even the person that works remotely now, she's actually in the office this week. Like she comes to the office every month for multiple days at a time because the like personal connections and the relationships that are developed based on having that proximity with people helps her do her job better when she's not physically here and reach out and know the personality quirks that each person have. Cause let me tell you, we all have our quirks. I know I can interact with Ed a certain way and I can interact with Robin a certain way or Brandon a certain way. And every one of them takes my feedback. Like Robin, I can be really cut and dry with what my feedback is and he's not going to take it personal. Whereas somebody else might, if I give them a one sentence email of like, hey, can we do it this way instead? They're going to see that as not a request for more insight or why we did it another way, but like as a demand that like Tom requires it to be this way. And it's like, well, that's not at all how it is. And like, if you interacted with me on a regular basis, like you would know that. So it's like those kind of personal connections, I think, help a lot. And we focused a lot around our team culture, how we interact with each other, what our kind of normal behaviors and accepted behaviors are around that. And knowing that critical feedback is super important to having a healthy team. We have this thing that we call internally, it's called pairing. And it's basically like if Sally goes and complains to Frank about Robin, well, if you have an issue with Robin, Sally should be talking to Robin about the problem, not Frank. You know what I mean? Because like Sally and Frank complaining about it are just going to mean that Frank's going to end up complaining about Robin as well and not actually doing anything to affect change on making Sally and Robin's Sally and Robin's relationship better. So it's those sort of interactions that I think are super, super important to get right. And we certainly iterated on them substantially over the years and making sure that you have the right frameworks in place for team members to be able to do that and the right education and training so that everybody knows that when you are giving critical feedback, that it's not done in some way to like malign the person or like make them upset or make them look bad in front of other people. It's actually to like lift them up and make them better overall. And that critical feedback goes across the entire team, like myself included. I regularly sit in rooms with folks from our CS team all the way up to our executive team where they're giving me really critical feedback about either things that we're doing in the product that we could be doing better or things that we're doing to help our customers via our CS channels that we could be doing better or just interpersonal interactions that I have with other people on like, hey, you said this the other week and like it went off on this weird tangent just because of the way that you said it. Like, I think if you phrased it this way next time, like it would have been received much better. It's like, oh, okay. Well, that's really helpful to know that because like you often don't have that perception. So it's helpful to be able to get that feedback across all parts of the company. So
it's crucial. It's crucial to your culture. It's crucial to what AWeber has become and is going to become in the future.
Absolutely.
And so staying along, I guess, this lines of sort of iteration and evolution, I'd like to know, like, you personally, like, as a founder, as a leader, as a human being, from coding it yourself 20 years ago to getting your first customer to over 100 people on the team 20 years later, 100,000 or more customers. And I mean, like you just said, like an executive team, a CS team, all these, it must have been massive changes for you personally to have to go through. How have you sort of stayed in front of a company without sort of getting run over by it? Mm-hmm. And have you sort of used like coaches or consultants or mentors?
All of the above. I think I would say if it's the best way to phrase this. Personally, I feel like I've been run over by my own company multiple times. And I would say that's both awesome and really terrible all at the same time. It's great in the sense that I've been able to hire and work with so many great people over the years. And the people that I work with today, in many cases, are very different than the people that I worked with years ago. And it's not because the people that were here years ago were the wrong people. It's because, like, in some ways, like, the company has continued to grow and the skills that you need are different over time. The team of engineers that operates when it's like three engineers is very different than the team that operates when it's 50 engineers. So those things evolve over time. And so in many ways, like, yeah, the team has like run me over a number of times where it's like, wow, like I'm just not keeping up. And then as fast as you think you're iterating yourself, it's like you have to iterate faster because you have to try to stay ahead of it constantly. And I think that I could delude myself and lie and be like, no, I totally kept up and I've totally educated myself all along the way. And I knew exactly what I'm doing at every moment. Anyone that tells you that, frankly, that's been doing this for any number of years is probably lying to you if they give you that answer. Because like, there are definitely days where it's like, wow, we have this problem and I have no idea how to solve it. Who in my extended network can I reach out to in order to figure out how to solve that? And that's where the extended network mentorship groups and so forth. So for a long time, I was a part of an internet entrepreneur group that was, it was a private, like invite only group. And it ranged from 20 to 50-ish people at its largest of other online entrepreneurs that did all sorts of different things, not just software. And so they've been really instrumental in my own feedback loop and asking questions and pointing out faults and those sort of things. You know, you have friends, like really true friends, when they're like, hey, that thing you're doing, that's really dysfunctional. Stop doing that. And I think that once you've established relationships, both personally and professionally, that are like that, you recognize how superficial a lot of our quote unquote friendships actually are. Hey, how you doing? What'd you do this weekend? How are your kids? Like all that kind of like BS that I think we occupy a lot of our conversations with. And I've since graduated to another group called YPO. It's Young Presidents Organization. And it's a collection of entrepreneurs, CEOs, professional managers that run much larger companies. And I'm in a local Philadelphia chapter here that's about 110 members or so. And then I have like a core group that I meet with once a month that is eight other individuals besides myself. So there's nine of us. And they range all across the spectrum of different kinds of business, so like real estate, fast food, publishing, like you name it, they do it. And it's so interesting how diverse all of our companies are and how similar all of our problems are. And we really push each other and we're able to learn from each other's mistakes and experiences in the past. And the whole kind of group is built around experiences and sharing experiences. And there's certainly advice that's given, but it's more often than not, it's framed in, okay, you're having that problem now. That reminds me of this time when I had this other problem that kind of is similar to that. And here's what happened. Here's the background. Here's how we ended up solving it. Here's how that outcome either worked or didn't work or what I might do different if it came up again. And when you go around a room and you collect that kind of feedback from half a dozen to a dozen different people, it's amazing the depth of experiences and how many ways there are to solve what is essentially the same problem. And that there's often not a right answer. There's just varying degrees of right. And then there's certainly some wrong answers in there as well. But like, there's usually a half a dozen ways that you could probably solve it with a positive outcome. And it's about picking the right one for that particular situation for you that aligns with other values there. But that's been huge to have that kind of support, both professionally as well as personal, because as an entrepreneur, I have a crappy day at work. My wife will tell you, I have a crappy day at home. She knows immediately whether or not I had a bad day or a great day. And it's so funny, like how our, you know, significant others can like pull that out of us. And so it's important to be talking about both and how they affect you. Because if I'm having some personal issue, like you bring that to work. And as soon as you're able to recognize like, oh, wow, I have this personal issue and I brought it to work. Well, what about Sally last week that just seemed all bent out of shape about this new product feature thing? Like, was it actually the product feature she was all bent out of shape about? Or like, she got something going on at home that... So it's about being able to have those further conversations to really understand and get to know each other. So I don't know. So much of what we do is so interrelated. We don't often step back from it far enough to like realize how interrelated it all is.
It really, really is. And also that idea, which you mentioned in there, the fact that we all sometimes, I think, well, we all do all the time, think we're way more unique snowflakes than we are. Meaning that the problems we're having are problems other people have had and solved.
Yep.
We just need to be able to willing to listen to them.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just like product features too. At any given point, if I or somebody else here has a new feature idea to solve some particular problem for someone, somebody else somewhere else on this planet has had the same idea or something really similar. And it comes down to who can execute it better and faster and cheaper than the other, and then get it out there and have other people know about it. So it's this constant kind of battle of like, yeah, that's a great idea. Like, okay, is it better than these other five ideas that we're also waiting to implement, and sift and sort and go from there. But yeah, it's interesting how that works.
I agree. And I'm sure this will change. And I'm sure your opinion will change over time. But from just say right now, do you foresee a time where the company's going to grow to a point where it's going to run you over, but you're going to be like, okay, I have to actually just step out of CEO position and let and put somebody else in place and just sort of step back and let this thing take off?
Yeah, probably. I don't know when that is exactly, but I try to regularly question whether or not, just like any other person in a role here, no one else here is going to fire me. They might tell me I'm doing a crappy job, but like, I'm the founder of the company. They can't fire me. But I can certainly collect feedback. And I think it's really important as founders of company to constantly be looking at like, am I the best person for adding the most value to the organization at this point in time? Am I doing the thing that is most important? And I think there is a time for many founders, if not most founders, when like you're probably not the best person to lead the company in the future. Now, I make no bones about it, and I've said it on other interviews in the past of like, if you ever hear that Aweber's going public, like expect me to be stepping aside. I have no desire to run a public company whatsoever. It's just not on my life goals list. And so I think that those are great questions to be asking. I think you kind of realize it. You know it when you see it, kind of thing. But I don't know when that time will come for me specifically, but it is something that I regularly ask myself.
Nice. So. And which I appreciate, like the fact that it's there sometime, but it's not something you're constantly dwelling on.
No.
Yeah. Because you're just enjoying it right now.
No, we're working hard, but that's I enjoy that part of it.
That's what I mean. Yeah. I mean, yeah it's you've built something great that's getting used by so many people that you get to put out ideas to those people and have product that's just being used just constantly all the time by tens of thousands of people.
Absolutely. If you want nothing more humbling is to put something out and have like some portion love it, some portion go, meh, and another portion go like, this is the most terrible thing ever. Like, I can't believe you would release this crap. And it's like, really? Like, most of the feedback's awesome. Like what? But everybody brings their own expectations. Everybody brings their own perspective. And I think it's important to listen to both. So it's really easy to get caught up in the like the people that say that it's crappy, but it's also important to listen to the people that say it's awesome. And here's how you can also add more value to it, because you can continue to iterate on it.
Exactly. All right, Tom, this has been a fascinating conversation. I would love to wrap up on one final question for you if I could. So after 450 something interviews at this point, I've come across this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So there seems to be this gap we live in between where we see ourselves as successful and where we see our businesses as successful and sort of where we are at the moment. Meaning in 3 months when you hit that revenue metric or in 6 months when you hit that other metric, whatever it happens to be, you and I both know that right before you hit that, there'll be bigger, loftier goals into the future, which I'm sure you've done many, many times. I agree we need those, but rather than always looking ahead right now, I would love it if you could stop, turn around, and look behind you for the next couple of minutes. The past 20 years, we talked about it a lot, but we haven't got nearly to all the highs, lows, wins, and losses. But just tell me how you feel about this whole journey until this moment.
It's kind of like child rearing. I have two young kids, so they're both like your highest highs and lowest lows. You know what I mean? So I've had days that are just epically awesome. And I've had days where it's just like, oh, why did I show up today? Like, this is just terrible. So, and I think that if you can look back and recognize that you have both, and hopefully the awesome days far outnumber the not awesome days. But I think it's been really satisfying to be able to help so many people around the world. At the end of the day, that's what we're doing. It's, you know, connecting with people in remarkable ways is kind of our kind of slogan. And you do that in so many different ways that you don't really understand until you kind of step back from it and really kind of take a tally of looking around, you know, company events and seeing all the families and new kids and, you know, new cars and, oh, so-and-so just bought a house. And it's like, oh, that's really cool. Like, that's all something that like this little email thing helped build. And then you go out to the customers and it's like, you know, you go and look at the schools that we're helping communicate and the entrepreneurs that are writing content about different subjects that they're able to communicate and just all the different things that we've been able to impact. And then ultimately it's okay. We have this sphere of 100,000 customers or so, but it's like, it's all of their subscribers as well that we're enabling our customers to then go out and communicate with. So it's just the sphere of influence is massive, and it's really awesome to kind of go back and take stock of like, hey, this little idea that I had 2 decades ago and turned into all of this through a lot of hard work from a lot of different people over the years. It's pretty cool. So
well said. Very well said. All something this little email thing did. What a way to speak of AWeber from the outside. I don't think anybody else would say that, but it's good that you can say that. I like it.
Well, thanks for having me,
John. I'm sure that there's maybe a couple of people listening that haven't heard of AWeber. We've talked about it throughout. Could you now, Tom, just tell them what AWeber is for and who it will help?
Certainly. So AWeber is an email marketing automation tool for small businesses across all enterprises and industries. We have customers that do it, but allows you to set up email newsletters, allows you to create automatic updates that come out from your blogs. It allows you to create marketing automation sequences. So if somebody clicks on a particular email, they get a different series of emails. But it's basically an email tool for communicating with your customers, prospects, team members, your employees. It's a great education tool. But yeah, it really, there's so many different ways that it's used. But at the core of it is the email marketing automation and the ability to go out and communicate with people around the world in remarkable ways. So
I love it. AWeber.com, AWEBER. I'll link to it in the show notes for you as well, but you can check it out at any time if you need email marketing service to help your business. Tom, actually, right before the show, told me that I became a customer in 2008 of AWeber. Wow. That it made me feel like, wow, that was a long time ago, but okay.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Exactly. All right, Tom, thank you so much again for stopping by. Thanks for sharing so openly and honestly. I truly, truly do appreciate it. And I don't know, man, just keep doing what you're doing because it's truly awesome to watch.
Likewise. Thanks for having me on, John. It's been fun.
All right. That was a lot of fun. And tell me, it's not kind of captivating. The story of a tiny piece of software just that does one tiny function of something that doesn't yet exist as a side hustle while working and turning it into a massive, successful company. Maybe you right now are thinking of that side hustle. Maybe you want to start something, and maybe you doubt you have what Tom has. Maybe you doubt that you're even an entrepreneur. Well, I set up a quiz, 6 parts, 6 quick questions, take less than 2 minutes, and it's going to answer that question for you, and it's going to tell you what to do next. You should check it out, hacktheentrepreneur.com/quiz. So now let's get back to that conversation. We talked about a lot of things. We discussed sort of the inception of AWeber all the way through to now, how he thinks about business and what he thinks about creating this team around it and solving problems and building product. That means that there was a ton of things said, a ton of really, really insightful and smart things said by Tom. I hope that you got them all. But now we have the difficult task of going back and picking out just one of them. Are you ready? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Anytime I get to look at something, it's an opportunity to kind of poke holes in it. And even if the poking holes is not necessarily making the interface better or whatever the thing is better, but the poking holes for me is often my own education of like, okay, so why'd you decide to do it that way? Oh, okay, that makes sense. I never thought about it like that. And you're then able to take that to something else that you interact with on a daily basis.
And that's the hack. Tom. I love this. Poking holes in things to use it as an opportunity to learn, to grow, to build sort of your knowledge around anything and taking that knowledge that you now have or that experience and bringing it into other aspects of your business, of your life. But it goes deeper than normal because it's not just asking a question if you don't know how something works. It's even if you understand how it works, asking the question, why did you do this? Like, what were you thinking about to make you come to the conclusion to do it this way, no matter what this is? Because you'll get some insight from how that other person thinks. And in that, you'll learn. You'll learn a new perspective on things. It kind of reminds me of the whole Toyota back in the 80s when they were trying to figure out how to manufacture cars better. They came up with something called the five whys. And it was asking why five times. So when somebody does something, you ask them why. And then when they tell you why it happens, you ask them why again. This is sort of like a simpler version of that, but I think it's an amazing habit to think about bringing into your life. In grade school, when we're little, we're told there's no such thing as a stupid question, but we often stop as we grow older asking questions because it might make us look dumb. This way, the way Tom does it is it's not just when you don't understand how something works. It's when you're trying to actually see the new perspective or the reason behind why this works. Tom, absolutely love this. Thank you so very, very much. All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed that nearly as much as I did because I've wanted to have Tom on the show for a long time and it was really cool to get to sit down with the guy who came up with autoresponders, something that I use every single day of my life now. So that was really, really cool. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the site. Head over there. We've been writing a lot on the blog. I think you'll really dig some of the stuff going on over there. But as always, I don't want to take up any more of your time than I need to. I appreciate you stopping by. If this was your first time, I hope you will join us again next week. If you've been here many times, thanks again. I really, truly appreciate it. And I hope you know that. Either of you, though, if you've been here before or not, ratings and reviews, they're amazingly helpful to the show. Wherever you're listening right now on your phone, just iPhones or Androids, it doesn't matter. If you're in Google Play, if you're on iTunes, if you're on Spotify, you can like things, you can rate them, you can review them. All those things help. And you've heard it a million times from 1,000 people. So I'll stop now. All right, it's been fun. Thank you once again. I truly appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.